Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is presented by the Riverstone Retirement Communities of Oak Park and Bridalwood Trails, your complete continuum of care.
From the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin. If you have a medical question, call us at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255. Email sundayhousecall@cfra.com. Now here's Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to edition number 305 of Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. I'm broadcasting live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 here in Ottawa and taking your calls at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. And for those listeners outside of the 613 calling area, 1-800-580-2372. And as always, earlier calls are much appreciated. Tend to get everybody on the air, answer your questions in full, and provide you with the information that you can use in discussions with your healthcare provider. And had a couple of news items, but I want to go straight to the phone lines because the phones are starting to, we are starting to get some calls, and there are some news items I'd like to cover later on. But we're going to go to line one and speak to Annette. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin. My sister has terminal cancer. It's the liver, the lungs, and other parts in the stomach. We saw a Dr. Oz program where he had a lot of people on who were using the drug Gleevec, and it was curing leukemia, and these people were totally cured. I just wonder, is it good for other types of cancer? Because it's a quite expensive drug, but worthwhile if it would have results.
Well, I think we have to be very careful when we talk about curing cancer, because Gleevec is one medication that is used specifically for leukemias and not really indicated for other kinds of cancer. So you have to make sure that if you are going to use it, there's an indication for its use. So in this case, it is used for specific types of intestinal tumors. They're called GIST or GIST tumors. And also chronic myeloid leukemias, or CML. It's also used for other kinds of leukemias, but not for liver, lung tumors. It's not indicated for those things. And also, when people talk about being cured, one of the issues I have with Dr. Oz's show is that he provides some information, but not a lot. He sort of will provide a glossed-over version of things, and then people will see these things on the show and apply it in areas that may not necessarily be correct. So in this case, Gleevec is not indicated for liver or lung cancers.
Okay, that's why I wanted to clear this up with you. Is there anything else that she cannot tolerate some of the drugs that they are giving her, and especially morphine? Is there anything else that would help her for her pain?
There are other medications for pain relief. She's using, you said she's using morphine. Yeah. Anything, is she getting nauseated or is she constipated or what?
Morphine makes her constipated and it makes her itch. I mean, she scratches until she bleeds.
Okay. And is there any hives or rashes that develop when she takes it?
No.
Okay. And when she's not taking it, the itch disappears?
The itch disappears. She tried using Tylenol for a while, you know, the extra strength, but then it gave her stomach cramps. And she had to stop. She is coughing up blood.
She is
now
too
at the moment.
Well, I mean, there are other medications to use for pain. You know, if we look at other categories other than narcotic medications, there are there's a few. Okay, so the ones that we can list off for her to speak to her physician to try.
Okay.
There is one of them is called amitriptyline. Amitriptyline is used usually at nighttime. It helps with sleep. It also is used in conjunction with other pain medications to control pain a little bit.
Okay.
The other one that is used is called Lyrica, L-Y-R-I-C-A.
Right.
And that also can be used in conjunction with other medications for pain that's used in chronic pain control. So that can be used.
Okay.
Another one that can be used is called Sesamet. Sesamet is actually a synthetic form of what is found in marijuana or cannabis. It's sold in pill form, and it is used in the treatment of pain control.
Okay.
using it to try and help people control their pain. Again, used in conjunction with other pain medications. There are other types of narcotic medications other than morphine that she may tolerate better. But again, that has to be determined in discussion with her physician. Other things that can be used, well, Tylenol is one thing that's used as well. Another one that can be used is something called, what's it called now? Tramacet is another one.
Tramacet.
Or Tramadol, T-R-A-M-O-D-O-L, Tramadol. And that also is a pain-relieving medication that can, again, be used in conjunction with some of the others. So there's a whole combination of different medications that can potentially help her. If she gets constipated by taking certain medications, there is something that can be used that's gentle on the stomach that helps keep people regular. And that particular compound, it's a crystalline powder that's mixed in with anything. It doesn't have any taste to it, so it can be mixed in with water, milk, juice, doesn't matter, is called, the short name for it is called PEG, P-E-G,
right.
3300.
3300.
Yeah, the long name for that is called polyethylene glycol 3300, but PEG is, everybody knows what PEG is when you mention it.
Okay.
So that is another thing that can be used to help her with at least a side effect of the constipation. If she is getting itchy, but is not getting any rashes and not experiencing any other problems with regards to breathing when she takes it, then using an antihistamine might be very helpful in reducing the itch so that she could still take something for pain and not experience the itch that she is having.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's all stuff I can discuss with her doctor.
All right.
Thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Oh, you're very welcome, Annette. All the best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
521-TALK, 521-8255 is the number to call. We have lots of lines available, and we're going to go to line 3 and say good afternoon to Shelby. Good afternoon.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Dworkin.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have a blood pressure pill question.
Okay.
Going on to 73, and my blood pressure is 139, 140 over 80.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor said that's fine given my age. And I'm kind of concerned. I do have right-sided headaches now and again at the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. So you're worried about the risk of stroke and such?
Yeah, and I'm wondering if that's too high a blood pressure, or should I be looking elsewhere to get it lowered?
Well, are there any other medical conditions that you have? Are you being treated for anything else?
No, not really.
Okay, so
depression, a bit of depression, Risperdal.
Okay, but in terms of
that's all the medications.
Okay, well that's good.
Osteoporosis.
Okay, so no other cardiac or heart problems or
I have right bundle branch.
Okay,
hockey's that was diagnosed recently. It's
okay,
benign. They said.
All right, well, Shelby, if you want to hang on for a sec, we have to take a small break, and then we can come back, and I'm going to answer your question about what needs to be done.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on one sec.
Okay.
And we are going to take a small break, and we have lots of lines available. Looking forward to your calls, 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility. Call in early because always at the end, people are left hanging, and I know you get disappointed because of that and frustrated because you've been waiting so long. So call in now. Be able to answer your questions, 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in just a few minutes.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by LivingHealthyChamplain.ca, helping you take control of your health.
580 CFRA's Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, SundayHouseCall@CFRA.com.
At the doctor's office.
Oh, okay, so that's good. Well, in terms of treatment, right now, if you have no other issues with regards, for example, to having diabetes or high levels of cholesterol or any of those factors that would, or smoking. Do you smoke?
No.
Okay, good. So
my cholesterol is under control.
Are you taking medications for it?
Just the non-flush niacin, and it seems to put it under control, but I'm cardiologist, okay. Said I can stop that anytime.
Oh, good. All right. So in this situation, with a blood pressure that's at 139 over 80, and if we're assuming that the blood pressure is for the most part under 140 over 90, and so you're 139 over 80, There's no need to treat the blood pressure.
Okay.
There's no evidence that treating this at this time for you in the absence of other other risk factors is going to really make much of a difference. So if, on the other hand, your blood pressure was consistently over 140, it was 145, 150, then you would say, yeah, there is something to do to reduce that blood pressure. There have been some what's called epidemiological studies, that is looking at blood pressure levels and outcomes, or at least whether people had complications from that. And they found that in certain cases, when blood pressure was over 110 over 75 and continued to increase, there seemed to be some differences with having stroke or having heart disease. But part of the problem was is that they couldn't account for other risk factors, whether people had diabetes or high cholesterol level. So it was it's difficult to say that lowering blood pressure right now, although there's some data that suggests it, lowering blood pressure to those levels will reduce your risk of disease.
Oh.
So taking a medication right now in the absence of other risk factors may not really contribute much, and you may have side effects to the medication that...
Yes.
So it's always a trade-off between risks and benefits. And right now, the benefit of taking a medication when your blood pressure is below the cutoff of what is considered to be high blood pressure really doesn't pan out. There's really no reason to take a medication at this time. And also, your cardiologist has probably told you the same thing.
Oh, he said I needed monitoring.
Yeah, and that's all you need to do, because right now your pressure is still within the normal range. If, on the other hand, it increases and you do a few blood pressure levels and readings, and you find that over the next 3 to 6 months it's consistently high, what they may want to do is do what's called an ambulatory blood pressure monitor. That is, they have you on a blood pressure monitor for 24 hours. You just walk around, you sleep with it, you go out, you do whatever you want, and then it monitors what your pressure was during the course of the entire day. And by doing that, it will tell the person who's looking at the results what percentage of the time your blood pressure is elevated and what percentage of the time your blood pressure is normal. And if for the most part your blood pressure is normal throughout the day, they can tell you, hey, there's no reason to treat you. Taking a blood pressure medication is not going to make this look any better.
Okay. Well, I feel more comfortable, doctor.
Well, good. I'm glad, Shelby.
Thanks for the help.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and we're going to speak to Trish. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I called you a couple of months ago about a colonoscopy that I had.
Yes.
The colonoscopy from hell, actually.
Right, that caused you a lot of discomfort. Exactly.
Yeah. The end result was that I had three successive weekly phone calls from the patient representative at the hospital, sympathizing and telling me that the nurse had been counseled, the one that I mentioned to you that wasn't very bedside manner-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have been postponing getting back to you, but the whole experience caused me to have what commonly known as a nervous breakdown. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get out of bed for about a week.
Because of the horror.
I was just consumed with anxiety.
Yeah.
And I guess I just had to wait until I came down from it. But I've been seeing a chiropractor, and the question I have is about blood pressure, similar to the lady before. They told me that I had adrenaline fatigue, and that was evidenced by taking my blood pressure, standing up, and then taking it lying down.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently if it changes when you stand up, you have adrenaline fatigue. And I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, to be frank, there's really no such thing as adrenaline fatigue.
Do the naturopaths know that?
I can't speak for them. What I can tell you, adrenaline is produced by the adrenal glands, and that is, it's released usually when people get frightened or scared. And that's why your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure increases, your muscles are able to use energy much more quickly. It's a fight or flight type of response.
Right.
And that's what adrenaline does. But in terms of what you're describing, that is blood pressure from a standing and lying down, or from lying down to standing, it's normal to see blood pressures drop sometimes. It's called a postural drop, meaning that if you think of the body as a column of water, that has in or a glass tube with water that has a bit of air in the tube. When you're lying down, the air sort of floats on the top of the tube and the water distributes evenly throughout the tube. Mm. When you lift the tube up straight, put it vertically, what happens is the water goes to the bottom and the air goes to the top. Well,
it's
similarly with blood pressure. When you are lying down, your blood pressure will be even throughout your body for the most part because the effects of gravity are equal on all parts of your body because you're lying completely flat. Mm-hmm. But when you stand up, the effects of gravity are such that your blood will tend to pool or move towards the bottom.
Right.
And in the 30 seconds to a minute that it sometimes takes your body to accommodate that change in pressure, where the blood tends to flow less to the brain because you're standing up, which can make you feel faint, your body's nervous system kicks in. It's called your autonomic nervous system. And autonomic for a reason is that it works without you having to do much. Mm-hmm. And sensors in the body pick up that the pressure is going down in the brain and that the vasculature in your body will constrict to increase resistance to get, and your heart rate will pick up a bit to push blood back up into the brain. So that's what causes the drop in blood pressure, is simply the change in position will elicit that very commonly. It tends to be more pronounced in people who, for example, are very warm. They're lying in a warm bed and then they get up out of bed and they stand up. Their blood vessels are dilated on the surface of their skin to radiate away heat. And because blood vessels are dilated, there's less resistance. And when you stand up, blood will tend to pool more in those and you get less blood flow to the brain and you feel like you're going to faint or see stars, that kind of thing. Mm. So in terms of adrenaline fatigue, probably not the right diagnosis. Like I said, there's no specific condition that is adrenaline fatigue. There are conditions where the adrenal glands produce too much adrenaline, and that is usually caused by a small tumor, very rare, called a pheochromocytoma, and that can cause very high blood pressures, very rapid heart rates, anxiety because adrenaline is being secreted on a regular basis, and that's a serious condition that needs to be treated. But adrenaline fatigue, I think they're just giving you a name, Trish. I don't think they're giving you a real entity.
I had the same reaction from my MD.
Okay.
Okay, thanks very much, Doug.
You're very welcome, Trish. I'm glad at least that your complaint was taken seriously.
Oh, yes. They were all apologetic.
Very good.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. We have lots of lines available. And we're going to say hello to Dorothy.
Oh, hello, Dr.
Hi.
I'm in my early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I have developed in the past week spasms and frequency in the bladder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have cystitis, but I become incontinent. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's the problem. And I do have a prolapse uterus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you say?
Well, now, when you say you don't have cystitis, have you had the urine check to look for infections?
Yes.
And there was nothing there?
No.
Okay. And how long ago was that checked?
That was checked about a week ago.
But you're still having the problem now?
Yes, and I'm on my last tablet, or last capsule.
And now what medication are you taking?
Just a minute here. I got it here. I'm taking, she gave me 10 capsules of MACROB ID.
Macrobid. Okay.
100 milligrams.
Okay, so that's an antibiotic, and you've been taking that for about a week?
Yes, I'm on the last capsule.
Okay. Now, this started, though, suddenly, the spasming?
Yes, very sudden.
Okay. All right. Well, what we're going to do, Dorothy, is there's a bunch of information that I want to provide to you and sort of next steps, but we're coming to the break for the news.
Yes.
So I'm just going to put you on hold, and then we'll get right back to you right after the news.
Thank you.
Okay. And we will do that. We still have some lines available, 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. Looking forward to speaking with you and answering your questions. I have a lot of fun doing this. I'd rather do this than go over some news items. I think providing you with this kind of information is important in your discussions with your physician and just for general information. We will be back just after the news. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in about 2 to 3 minutes.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, Sunday House Call.
News Talk Radio 580, CFRA.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by Motion Specialties for all your home health care needs.
The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment.
Now back to Dr. Barry Dworkin on 580 CFRA Sunday House Call. The numbers 521-TALK, 521-8255.
And we're going to go straight back to the phone lines and continue our conversation with Dorothy. And Dorothy, you were saying this started about a week ago,
yeah.
And it started suddenly. That usually indicates an infection. Now, the fact that the macrobid has not worked, and the macrobid is the trade name for a medication that's called macrodantin. And usually if you've noticed incontinence, going to the bathroom frequently, a feeling like you have to go all the time, that usually implies a bladder infection.
Yeah.
And likely what has happened is that you have bacteria that is resistant to the macrobid. And so what needs to be done, there are a couple of things that need to be done. The first is a urine culture to look to see what bacteria are growing. And the urine culture will also say what antibiotic works best against it.
Yes.
But what would follow secondly is usually a switch to another antibiotic in the interim, because it will take a day or two to get the urine culture back.
I took over urine. Well, actually, it was funny. They gave me, of course, a bottle, you know. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get anything.
Right.
I worked and worked anyway. I brought it home, and of course, I took it back over at the university. And that was last Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Now I haven't heard anything since.
Right.
Would it be, would I have heard anything?
You should have, especially if you're being treated for a bladder infection. But what I can say, though, is that when you collected the specimen, how was it stored and how long did it take to get it over to the university?
Well, I took it immediately over.
Right.
I told the girl that takes the appointments,
right,
to give it to the nurse and put it in the fridge.
Okay.
My appointment was early afternoon, and, of course, I came home, don't live far. And then I took it back. I took it back around 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
And that was last Monday, but I haven't heard anything.
Okay.
Should I get in touch with them?
I would, and I would likely have another sample looked at, and the reason is that you haven't improved, and
no.
You are having, you know, you are having spasm, you are having frequency, going to the bathroom very often, and although there is a prolapsed uterus, it certainly could potentially contribute to some of the bladder problems.
Yes.
But for something to happen suddenly like this.
Yes, and to be, I think the worst part is incontinence.
Yeah, and that usually implies an infection. It could mean that the bladder dropped a bit, but that wouldn't give you the urgency. It wouldn't give you the feeling like you have to go all the time. That's usually a result of irritation of the bladder wall, which is usually secondary to an infection. A prolapsed bladder would give you incontinence, but not necessarily the urgency. So that's the difference between the two. So there is definitely something going on, something that's happened acutely or suddenly.
Yes.
And will likely require a different antibiotic at least to try until a good urine sample is sent off for a culture and identified if there is growth, and also identifying any sensitivities to a particular antibiotic.
Well, I brought over the bottle, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I was only about an hour or so, you know, and
right.
Since I got home, I could, and then I took it immediately right over.
Okay, and that's good.
I told them put it in the fridge if they couldn't mm-hmm. do anything about it.
But they may have to get another sample
yes.
in order, because you're still having symptoms, and so that really needs to be determined. Other things that would follow from this, if we follow this through and they don't find anything, that is, they don't find any bacterial infection, then next steps are ultrasounds of the bladder and of the uterus to see what the anatomy looks like. And then if there is a noticeable change in the position, the anatomical position of those organs, they may then want to refer you to somebody to correct that. But
yes.
At the same time, though, I think we have to look at the most common likelihood, which is an infection that has happened recently and just hasn't cleared with this particular antibiotic.
I'll phone her tomorrow.
Good.
I think that would be best.
I think that would be the best thing to
Thanks
do.
Thanks so very much,
You're
Dr.
very welcome, Dorothy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. 521-TALK, 521-8255, *580 on Bell Mobility, and good afternoon to Richard.
Good afternoon, doctor.
How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I'm an older person.
Okay.
I have aneurysms. I've had 6 operations for them, including a AAA.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 7th one coming along.
Mm-hmm.
And both my mother, my grandmother, my mother's sister, and my uncle all died of aneurysms.
Now, are these abdominal or cerebral?
Abdominal.
Abdominal, okay.
One was in one of the AAA,
mm-hmm.
2 were in the groin,
right.
And 2 were behind the knee.
Okay.
Now, my concern is there are no symptoms.
Correct.
There is no pain, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I have 2 boys.
Okay.
And they're now reaching mid-30s.
Right.
What other than Dopplers, because they laugh it off when I ask them to go and have a Doppler every once mm-hmm. in a while, what other than Dopplers is there a way to locate these things?
Actually, Richard, you've given the correct answer already, is that the Doppler, the ultrasound, is the way to be able to detect them. It's 100% sensitive. As a test, it's a terrific screening test for aneurysms because it is really 100% accurate in detecting aneurysms, especially abdominal aortic aneurysms and iliac artery aneurysms. So there isn't any other test. Touching the body, putting your hands on the abdomen to feel for pulsations. Sometimes if the aneurysm is huge, you'd be able to feel a large pulsatile mass.
But, yes, I can put my hand behind my knee and feel it.
Yeah. But
I know I've got another one.
Right, but...
And I went to my surgeon, and he said, I'm getting to be as good a doctor as he is,
mm-hmm.
because I can detect these things. But I keep talking to my sons about this.
Now, when was your first aneurysm diagnosed? How old were you when they first noticed?
I was 61 years old.
61.
It was a 3.5, and they waited until it got to...
Right.
It was a 3.5, and they waited until it got to 5.5.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And then, so that took how many years before it reached 5.5?
About 3 years.
Okay, so you're about 65 years old when that happened.
Yes.
Okay. Well, at age 30, although it's unlikely that they have aneurysms forming right now, you are very correct that with a family history, it's certainly worth following. At age 30, you could do the Dopplers, but it likely is going to show a normal aorta. When they get towards age 60, that's when they should have an ultrasound done in order to evaluate if there's any changes, because that's when they detected yours was around age 60.
Yes.
Now, for your other family members, you mentioned that there's quite an extensive family history of this. Were
yes.
they all in the 50 to 60 year old range when this was detected?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
They were.
So that's also very helpful because that gives us a timeline to recommend to them when to have that done. They shouldn't laugh it off. You should then follow it up and say, well, you know, when you're 50, 60 years old, it's something that you should do. There's a caveat to this, though, because if they develop, for example, they develop diabetes, they develop high blood pressure, if they smoke, do they smoke?
No.
Well, that's a good thing. So that's less of a risk factor then. But,
yeah.
You know, those other factors can contribute to a worsening of the condition. So it's you're right about screening, probably about 20 years too early, though.
Does it die out in the family, or does it really just carry on and carry on?
That's another good question. Not sure if that's the case. You know, there is an association in families. Not sure about whether it will continue on down the line. But nevertheless, because it's such an easy test to do to detect whether somebody has this or not, it's not invasive. It takes literally 10 minutes to find out.
Yeah.
It's worthwhile for someone to go anyway if there was a family history.
Yeah, I go every 6 months.
Yeah, and you have to because you already have the aneurysms and you do have to have that close follow-up.
But there's no medication at all that you can take them that will reduce this other than blood thinners, correct?
Well, there's no medication because this is an actual anatomical change to the wall of the artery. And
okay.
There's no medication that's going to stop that. They're not sure what the mechanisms are. They're trying to find out what it is because if they do find that there is some sort of chemical change in the arterial wall that leads to it weakening like that, they may be able to block that change. But for the moment, all that can be done is monitor if it's picked up, follow the size of it. Once it reaches a critical size, they then will do surgery to correct that.
And ironically, I was a smoker till I was about 60 years of age, then stopped, and they continued on after that.
Right. And it's likely a combination of things. Smoking certainly can contribute to it, but it's not the only risk factor. But it certainly doesn't help, and I'm glad you stopped smoking, because it certainly doesn't help the condition. And smoking in other ways provides a problem with peripheral vascular disease, heart disease, stroke, kidney problems. I mean, you need a host of things, and lung cancer. So, you know, it's good that you stopped anyway.
One more quick question.
Sure.
My youngest boy works out every day.
Mm-hmm.
Is this good or bad for him?
Working out, I think exercise is great if he feels up to doing it and he's...
But it's not more critical that it'll burst.
No, unlikely. Given that he's in his 30s, it's unlikely to cause anything like that from happening.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Richard. Thanks for
the
questions. Bye-bye now. We're going to take a small break. And when we come back, we have Henry on the line who wants to talk about benign prostatic hypertrophy. And any other calls or questions that you have, please feel free, 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. Back in a few minutes.
580 CFRA Sunday House Call, your weekly checkup with Dr. Barry Dworkin. Call us at 521-TALK, 521-8255, or email the doctor, sundayhousecall@cfra.com.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by livinghealthychamplain.ca, helping you take control of your health.
A House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is brought to you in part by Motion Specialties for all your home health care needs.
Now back to Dr. Barry Dworkin on 580 CFRA Sunday House Call. The numbers, 521-TALK, 521-8255.
And a good afternoon to Henry.
Doctor?
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call. I listen to you every week. Good program.
Thank you.
6 weeks ago, I was diagnosed by my doctor that I had a benign prostate hyperplasia.
Yes.
He gave me 6 weeks of antibiotic for treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That is the aprofloxacin, 400 mg.
Okay.
And combined with one pill for passing the water better is during the dinner time, as the rodeo tamsulosin and 0.4 mg.
Right.
Well, since I took about all this pill all for the last 5 to 6 weeks now, I feel like a two different kind of person. I become suddenly very tired.
Mm-hmm.
Before I have a lot of energy, is all of a sudden very, very tired. And sometimes even I eating my lunch or supper sort of breath. So what do you think the problem is?
So my understanding from what you're describing is that you had a prostatitis or an infection of the prostate.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And so they gave you the antibiotic, and they gave you medication to relax the prostate gland.
Yeah.
Have those symptoms disappeared? Are you finding that you're able to urinate now and that there's no pain? Is that better?
Yeah, urinate is better. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but is this the one for urinate better? The medicine is causing in there. It's on the paper cause. Possible side effect, it may cause unusual tiredness. Would that be the thing or what?
It certainly could be a side effect of the medication that you were taking.
Yes.
And given that you weren't feeling tired at the beginning of your treatment and you're feeling tired now,
yes,
it could be from the medication. It could be the fact that you had an infection for a while and that also takes a toll on the body.
Yes.
It could be something completely different that is contributing to your fatigue as well. So, what now? Has the medication stopped, or are you still taking the medication?
I got 2 more days of antibiotic.
Okay.
And then I got still got over here. Give me at least for 3 to 5 weeks of the medicine from a patient's urine anyway.
Okay. Well, one of the ways to find out is that in another few days the antibiotic will stop.
Yeah.
And that way you'll be able to see as well whether the fatigue is becoming less of an issue with time. And ultimately, when the other medication is stopped, the tamulosin, it will, you'll be able to see as well from that if the fatigue is disappearing. Other things that can be done with regards to fatigue, just to be sure, is, again, to speak to your physician. And things that commonly can contribute to fatigue in people are low vitamin B12 levels, low iron, anemias, lower active or inactive thyroid glands. These type of things can contribute to some fatigue. But given that this started at around the same time that you started the treatment for the prostatitis, you'd have to think that's the medication first. So ultimately, the answer may come when you finally are off all these medications.
Is there any other kind of medicine for the passing the water better, another kind better than the one here, or it won't?
What you're taking now is pretty much what you should be taking.
We've been taking it, okay.
And, I mean, there are other types of the same kind of medication, just a different brand,
yes,
that do exactly the same thing.
Okay.
So there'd be no point to change those from one to the other.
Yeah.
So likely what may need to happen is to finish the complete course of all these medications and then see how you feel afterwards.
Yeah, because it also it seemed to be increasing my irregular heart rate, say, so the way, you know.
Well, one of the medication that you're taking for allowing you to urinate more easily actually can lower blood pressure a little bit. That's one of the effects that it can have.
Well, I have high blood pressure anyway. I was taking
that can help you a little bit.
But the thing is, seem to be make me very tired. I just I just don't.
Well, as I said, the options are to do some blood work in order to see whether there is indeed another contributing factor for the fatigue, and that certainly something that can be done. The other is, again, to finish the complete course.
You say is my iron is low or something?
No, what I'm saying is that there are certain things that can contribute to fatigue. If we're doing an evaluation of fatigue, that is to say, what other things can be causing this for this person?
Yeah.
Then there are certain tests that can be done to answer the question. So in order to answer the question, the most common causes of fatigue in people are low iron is one of them.
Low iron,
more so for women. Women tend to have low iron levels more so than men.
Yeah.
Low vitamin B12 levels can do that. Anemias, that is low hemoglobin levels, can do that as well.
So I get some vitamin B to take in that? Or should I go ask first?
Yeah, I wouldn't start taking anything until... You know, the whole idea is you don't want to start treatments unless there is a specific indication for doing so.
Okay.
And so to take something on the assumption that something is low is not the correct way to do that because the blood test is very specific.
Yeah.
It will tell you what your vitamin B12 level is. It will tell you what your iron or ferritin levels are. It will measure the hemoglobin and tell you whether there's any anemia with less red blood cells. That's the kind of approach that should be taken if, and I underline, if a workup for fatigue is going to be done. Same thing for the thyroid gland, where they will do a blood test. But ultimately, the fact that you're having fatigue that is coincident with having started two medications for a prostate infection.
I don't have a thyroid anymore. They removed my thyroid because...
They removed your thyroid gland?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, are you taking medications for your thyroid?
Yeah, every day
Taking thyroid hormone.
Yeah, thyroid hormone, yeah.
Well, one of the things to do is to have that, if it hasn't been checked recently, is to check your thyroid hormone level, because if it's a bit too low, that can certainly make you feel tired.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
So there are a few things, but it's being systematic about it and making sure that that we're looking at all the potential causes for your fatigue, but at the same time, taking into account that you have had an infection, and it's a difficult infection to clear. Prostatitis takes a long time to clear out.
I have heard that this is a 0.4 mg. Mm-hmm. It is making my nose are very caught up. Congestion.
Well, it may.
Do you think that the medicine is that way, or what?
It may or may not, Henry. But I wouldn't bank on that. But anyway, we have to go because we only have about 25 seconds left to the show.
Okay, thank you.
But thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you for your call. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
For your advice. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now.
Thank you.
My apologies to Linda, who wanted to talk about back pain, but we do have to go. And my thanks to everyone for continuing calling and asking questions. I really enjoy this hour on a Sunday afternoon. And you've been listening to Sunday House Call. We'll be back next week with another show. Everyone, have a great week.
Sunday House Call with Dr. Barry Dworkin is presented by the Riverstone Retirement Communities of Oak Park and Bridalwood Trails, your complete continuum of care.